Hey gang, are you new to this podcast? Have you subscribed on Spotify, Stitcher, or Apple Podcasts and realized that you can only access the 20 most recent shows on these platforms? Do you, my friend, want to binge on How Did I Get Here? Well, check out our archives that are available on the Podbean app. If you follow us on the Podbean app, we have every single show ever released on that platform. You'll also get all of your favorite shows like Fresh Air, WTF with Marc Maron, ID10T, The Michelle Obama Podcast. All podcasts available there, and you can also access over 1,000 How Did I Get Here episodes. So, download the Podbean app from your app store and start listening today. Let's get down. Folks, are you tired of people telling you your band is too darn loud when you're just trying to practice in your house or garage? Well, if you live in Austin, I have the solution for you. That's Space Rehearsal and Recording. Space is a state-of-the-art affordable venue for rehearsal and recording located just a few miles south of downtown Austin. They have 31 spacious rooms, great PAs, fantastic, courteous staff. They have everything you need to get your artistic business together at Space. Find them at 512-448-9518 or go to spaceatx.com and start playing as loud as you want in Space Rehearsal and Recording. Let's get down.
You gotta open the vault.
Open my vault?
Open your vault.
Once I open the vault, it ceases to be a vault.
You have no choice.
Leave the vault.
Hello, I'm Johnny. I'm your host, and welcome to another episode of How Did I Get Here from the Vault, where I reach back into our vault that's over a decade old with almost 1,100 episodes, pull one out from the past, shine it up, and re-release it just in case you missed it along the way. Today, we go back to episode 395, originally released on July 14th, 2015, with The Octopus Project. Now, The Octopus Project is one of Austin's most innovative, creative, and musically brilliant exports. They have shown that they are creative innovators. They've scored films. At this point, when they came on the show, they were promoting the score for a film called Kumiko the Treasure Hunter, which was a beautiful, beautiful movie. And the score is equally as gorgeous. You got to check this out. You can find them at theoctopusproject.com. Now, you wonder what The Octopus Project is up to right now. Now, they're actually playing their first show of 2021 on October 28th at Levitation. And they're also scoring the new Reading Rainbow doc, Butterfly in the Sky. It's a documentary about Reading Rainbow, in case you grew up with it. I know that Yvonne and Josh Lambert and Toto Miranda all grew up with that stuff. We have a great conversation about Yvonne's Houston roots. About, at this point, they were a band for 16 years. Now today, in 2021, they've been together for 22 years. And they've been able to stay fresh and relevant, creating visual art, including videos, one-of-a-kind merchandise. In fact, when we had this conversation, they were doing these weird stuffed animals that were like these one-of-a-kind things. Anyway, Josh and Yvonne are a couple in a band. We talk about that. And also, this podcast was not recorded here in my apartment. It was actually recorded at Word Production Studios. Now, Word Productions is my friend Drew Donovan's company that does a lot of audio and visual production. They've actually been doing all the stuff out at the Hotspot. They did that Love and Light Stream Drive-In Festival, the production for that. And there was an engineer there named Juan Alcina. And during that time, we were partnering on some things and we were thinking about going into business together. So I started recording some podcasts there. They were recording my live podcast and things were going very well. It was a fun, fun time back in 2015, going to Word Productions. It's funny that I was going to go somewhere else than here. Anyway, Yvonne, Josh Lambert, and Toto Miranda and I have a great conversation about who The Octopus Project was actually in 2015. I'm sure in 2021, it's a lot different. I should reach out to them and get them back on the show. So without further ado, let's go back to episode 395, recorded at Word Studios, originally released July 14th, 2015, with The Octopus Project.
How did I get here from the vault?
We'll be right back. So as I said, I saw Kumiko this morning, and you guys did a brilliant job. Like, I was really moved. And there's one question I wanted to ask, because I've spent the day in, like, the Octopus Project world. like, totally. I watched your Arts in Context show and stuff. There's not a lot of talk about any kind of formal music training, but there is a part in, I wrote it down, the library scene in the movie where she was walking into the library. Mm-hmm. That there's like, I mean, that's like a pretty heavily, like classical musically, it's influenced by classical music pretty heavily.
It was meant to sound Baroque.
Baroque.
Fake Baroque.
That's exactly right. But it didn't seem like fake Baroque. That's what I was trying to say. Yeah. It seems like there was some real. Did any of you study? Not formally.
No, not formally. I have no formal training to speak of.
So that brings me to the question of it's like you guys encompass all of these things, like obviously like an art collective, but you're also like a band that throws their shit in a van and drives to Fitzgerald's.
Yeah.
You know what I mean?
Still,
often.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. So it started with Toto and Josh?
Yes.
Yes.
Okay.
Yes.
Do you guys want to talk about that? How did you guys meet?
We met when I think we were like 18, 19 and had mutual friends in bands and stuff, and then started playing in bands together. And I guess the first thing we did, just the two of us, was that Harry Bungus?
Mm-hmm. I think, no, was it?
Or
were we already doing
that? Was
Spring
the
Hill
name of the band?
Yeah, it was a really the worst band name we've ever had.
That was the first thing we did on our own.
Yeah.
We played together in a couple of other bands.
Right.
Okay. After we met, or we played with the mutual friends that introduced us.
And you were both in film school?
Yeah. This was after that, though.
Okay.
This is high school era when we got together.
Oh, and okay.
After this and that twist and turn, we both ended up at UT in film school.
Was that here in Austin you guys lived?
Yeah.
Okay. Did you guys grow up here?
Houston.
Houston.
Mm-hmm. Okay. What, like, were you guys HSPBA or any?
No.
I went to health professions.
You did?
I did. High school for health professions.
Were you going to do that?
That's what I wanted to do.
What aspect? Doctor?
Yes. Yeah. I mean, I was thinking psychology or occupational therapy, something along those lines at that time.
Are you glad you changed? Sometimes are you glad you changed?
I'm happy with the decisions I've made.
Good. Good. Okay, so you guys met, and then eventually they just kind of roped you in.
We were in another band together.
Okay.
And the two of them were already together.
Yeah. Okay.
Yeah. Yeah. We'd been dating like 4 or 5 years or something, maybe.
Wow.
At that
how long
point.
Have you guys been together?
I met Josh on his 18th birthday.
Wow.
Yeah. Long time ago.
And this is, how is it? You work together, you live together, you, like, you are together.
Yeah. We don't live together.
That would be great if that was true.
That's the one thing.
I mean, is it ever weird for you, Toto?
No, it's just the thing that we do.
Yeah. It's always been this way. We've never tried it it's never happened differently.
Yeah.
Nothing.
I feel like we try to keep, you know, band and personal stuff separate.
Do you do that? I mean, you got to compartmentalize things.
I guess. Or
I don't
like
know. I was going to say the opposite, that there's like not really a distinction.
Yeah, or maybe that's true. It's like, yeah, I guess.
You have a healthy relationship.
I compartmentalize No, I just have to like leave that other stuff over there so we can work.
Yeah. All right. I guess like on tour and stuff, it's just kind of, you know, it's band mode.
Yeah, it's definite band mode.
We're not like holding hands and going to movies or something.
Yeah.
How does that work, though? I mean, I've been in bands my whole life. I've never been in a band with somebody that.
You know, sometimes when we're on tour and we're together 24/7, I miss Josh, even though he's right there.
Right. Miss having Josh to yourself
I just, you know, miss feeling. I miss my husband, Josh. It's a different feeling being on tour, kind of working together, just being professional together, getting a job done.
Yeah.
Yeah. But, and, you know, it's something that we love. It's something we both want to do, and it's a big part of it.
It seems also like with everything that you do, because you're just a giant creative entity. Like everything that's happening with you guys are creating, like visual things right down to stuffed animals or stuffed things. What would you
Animals is good. That's yeah. a broad term.
Oh, that guy, Mister, I was going to ask you this one question and it's totally weird, but like you seem to be referring to him. Is he going to eventually be like your Eddie, like Iron Maiden? Like, will there be a giant Mister behind you guys when you play?
Various characters have kind of informally filled that role.
Yeah.
Through the years. Okay. We used to have a couple of ghosts on stage that were like unofficial mascots.
Right.
Yeah.
David and David.
Yeah.
Were their names.
David and David.
Mm-hmm.
That's good. That was a famous band.
Yeah.
Really?
Yeah.
David and David?
Mm-hmm.
Wow.
I didn't know about that.
Maybe those ghosts were
My
in that
friend
band.
David is in that band. No, seriously.
Oh, wait. Did you know David or David?
No, I knew David.
Okay.
Yeah. Cool. Yeah, I know the other one.
Yeah, you did. So you're always working on these things. Let's get back to this real fast. I mean, it's like in your house, like it seems like you guys are going 24/7 with the amount of things that you do, right down to, like, how did you, am I going in circles? Sorry. I have so many thoughts and I'm in a new place. I'm out of my normal environment. And so I'm a little bit nervous. Where did you come up with the idea for getting white viewmasters? And how do you get a bunch of white viewmasters?
I think.
Did you have them made or did you have to paint
them?
There's
yeah, there's a company that makes them. I think it was founded by the guy who invented it in the first place.
Right.
Who I guess at some point sold it to Mattel or whoever. I don't know. We kind of got on a 3D kick, but like super low tech 3D. Like we taught ourselves to do like the cross-eyed viewing method and did a bunch of 3D stuff for around the last record, made it like a 3D poster and came up with the idea for the Viewmaster to bundle it with the record for the deluxe edition. And just the internet will connect you with lots of wonderful things, and Viewmasters were sitting there waiting to be connected with.
There were different color options.
But you got the white.
The
ones.
White, yeah.
White
seems just
classic.
So great.
Yeah, yeah.
We made a blue one too that we sold as well.
Oh, that's right.
Pretty fancy.
So how does this work? Because we're gonna have to talk about this on all these different levels. Like even I don't know where to start with music or with art. But does one person bring like does one person go like, hey, I've got this idea for having a thing, and then another person goes like, shit, we could do a Viewmaster. It could be 3D. No way, I remember those. Oh wait, I'll look it up. Is that how it works?
That was the exact conversation.
Really? Yes. And so does it work like that with music too? Because I was trying to imagine when I was watching the movie today, like tell me how you did the music for the Kumiko, the Treasure Hunter movie. Like how did they ask you? Did you know someone involved? I saw that the Austin Film Commission was involved in the end credits. I saw that and I was... because it wasn't filmed anywhere near Austin or anything. So how did that have anything to do with it?
We're really good friends with the directors, David and Nathan Zellner.
Okay, so you've done other movies for them.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Okay.
Yeah. We did one other full film and have done pieces of like shorts and stuff.
They made some videos for us and we kind of trade creative favors.
Yeah. Right. Okay, so you knew them. And so do you get a script or do you get like a rough cut of the movie?
We got a rough cut.
Yeah.
They showed us the first half.
Yeah.
The Japanese stuff.
And
then
kind of
talked to us about what they were going for and gave us like some reference tracks for feel, which is all kind of stuff that we're into anyway. But they had a specific direction in mind for the music and kind of briefed us on that. And then went off and wrote pieces without really matching them to the movie, just or not to scenes, but just kind of with the tone of what we'd seen and what we talked about.
Sure.
And then went back and started piecing them in and filling them out and to match more closely. And
But in the creative process of coming up with the music, you do that together?
That was pretty separate, actually.
Yeah.
Okay.
And then we'll come together and kind of like make it all make sense.
So who came up with like the main theme, the Japanese like Kyoto sounding?
That was Toto.
Yeah. Okay.
It's a ukulele.
That was a ukulele?
Yeah.
That's awesome. And then who came up with that fake Baroque?
That was Toto.
That was one of mine. Yeah.
Okay. Is anyone like in charge of any certain sort of thing when you're creating?
No.
You know what I mean?
Yeah. I feel like we all just kind of gravitate towards what we're excited about, maybe at the moment.
kind of whoever has the idea, you guys come in and fill in the cracks around it, or
yeah, for the most part, like, or you know, we'll work on something for a little bit, and if it's not working out, we'll move on to a different idea or whatever. But yeah, I think that's about how it works. Like, yeah, we all work on something eventually together if one person brings an idea in at first.
Kind of share ideas in progress and talk about it could use some of this or some of that, and then the next round might be the same person or might be a different person, or we might take two people's ideas and put them together.
Right.
So it's both collaborative and separate.
Right. I was reading, or it was one of the things that I watched, maybe it was the Arts in Context, where you were talking about, Yvonne, when you got, did you have a toy organ when you were a kid, child, a little, like one of those Jamar things that like...
It was one that...
Sounds a little out of tune.
Yeah, it always sounded out of tune, and it was the kind that blew air.
Yeah.
that was my first organ.
So you said something that really struck me in it, and you were saying that you were trying to find a chord that made you cry?
It wasn't... I listened to a lot of classical music when I was really little. I had some cassettes that I played in my little brown Fisher-Price tape recorder that we all had. I think I was really touched with how Beethoven's music and Mozart's music made me feel.
Yeah.
Or just interesting to feel different ranges of emotion. And I think sadness was something... I mean, I was very young, playing by myself with this, in my room, but trying to think of something or, play notes that sounded sad to me.
Yeah.
And even when the three of us work together and we want to talk about music, sometimes we'll say, well, make it, we'll talk in terms of maybe emotion sometimes or color.
Right.
Benefits of no formal musical training.
Yes.
Well, no, but the thing is that in other electronic music, not to say that it's void of emotion, but like you achieve sort of like the happy feeling of like Anamanaguchi.
Yeah.
You know what I'm saying?
Yeah, yeah.
But like that guy never makes me feel like he never brings me down here.
Right.
With like some of his music.
It's all super party jams.
You guys go to these places, but then there's also this really human feeling, like it's instrumental, but the melodies that are happening make you feel melancholy or like a little sad or give you a little longing feeling. And I really thought that was a great thing that I feel makes you guys stand out. Where like even a band like Kraftwerk is super cool, but they never make you feel like sad.
Yeah.
You know what I mean?
Yeah.
I mean, so I thought that was amazing that you guys are able to do that. And that when you said that and that thing, it like your music made a lot of sense to me.
Mostly I like songs and sounds that make me laugh.
Yeah.
I think that's something that we all have in common.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Well, also the theremin is a great, that's like an instrument that really does cry in a way. Uh-huh. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
Like, and... How did you? It's from the movie that you.
Yeah, I saw the documentary in 98, maybe. It's when we first moved to Austin, and Josh and I decided to get one, and I ended up being the one that spent more time with it.
Yeah.
So.
Well, you can really play, and I remember noticing when the first time I saw you guys play that you could play it because there was like a little theremin explosion where like people were getting them. They just had no business.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? Because it's like a violin. Like if you don't know what you're doing, it sounds like it's like hell.
Yeah.
But you really, I mean, you really play in tune and you're really, you have that, what's her name, Clara Birch?
Clara Rockmore.
Clara Rockmore.
Yes.
What's Clara Birch? Is that somebody's name?
Yes.
Somebody Thor Birch.
Thor Birch.
Surely it is.
There must be a Clara Birch.
So
somewhere.
Clara Rockmore, yeah.
Yeah.
It was just amazing watching her when she was young play, but then also, like, as a very old lady, she looked so cool playing it. And she was really feeling it. Like,
yeah.
I mean, you have
face.
To.
Yeah.
But you have to. I mean, you're dealing with these invisible. You want to talk about that at all? Like, I mean, is it. Is that what attracted you to it? Is there's this whole like physicality to it and you're like involved? Because it only does one sound.
I don't know. It's just, I don't know. I just felt like it was, it just felt natural to me for whatever reason. I don't think I gravitated toward it because it was a physical thing. But when I started doing it and trying to learn how to play, which again, like when I was little, practicing organ to Beethoven, I started with practicing theremin with Beethoven. And I don't know.
Wait, so when you were practicing organ to Beethoven, were you really playing the melodies and stuff?
I was trying.
Do you think you were hitting it?
Sometimes.
And so you just did the same thing with
theremin? With theremin, just trying to pick it out by ear and see if I could make it do something interesting, make something new.
Right. Right. And why didn't you do it? Were you just like, this?
Because I tried.
That's what I feel like. I feel like I've been around him before, and I'm like, yeah, this isn't going to work.
Yeah, she started taking to it really quickly, and it just seemed kind of pointless for anyone else to
and
do it.
They can both play.
They can play.
Anybody can get kind of a melody.
No chops, no skills.
Yeah.
No. What's your studio? You have a studio.
Yeah, just in our backyard.
In the backyard.
Yeah. And what's that like? I mean, do you guys have a lot of weird old gear?
I wish.
Not a ton.
It's pretty minimal.
Yeah.
Mostly just what we play with live and then some recording stuff, but
we have a few things laying around, but it's not like the crazy attic that one might picture.
It doesn't look like switched on when you walk in.
Oh,
I wish.
Yeah.
Yeah. Wouldn't that be? I mean, that's what I imagine it looks like.
No.
Yeah. So let me ask you this. When you guys play live, you have some tracks that are playing as well?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, sometimes.
Some electronic.
Sometimes.
So, and how do you deal with that? Like, because that to me, I just did it the other night for the first time. I mean, since like the early 2000s when it was terrible. But I did it I play guitar for a band and they had tracks and songs started and ended with those things. And I was real nervous. Because I'm just like a rock and roll kind of, you know what I mean?
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
So what all is on the tracks on like, say, the most sophisticated, it's not on all the songs, but say the most tracks you have on a song?
Usually it'll be stuff that we can't play live, like a sequenced, you know,
sure,
synth line or some kind of like electronic beat or something like that.
Mm-hmm.
We try to keep the like guitars and bass and stuff, you know, stuff that we can actually play.
Yeah, not like backing vocals and all this kind of stuff. Yeah. No, I knew I wouldn't think of it as like in a cheating kind of way.
Yeah.
I would just figure that there are electronic elements in your music that you'd have to reproduce some way.
I feel like it's always something that you have to think about where to a certain point it benefits the sound and then at a certain point it detracts from the performance of like, wait a minute, who's doing that?
Yeah.
So we try to balance it out. And I think as time goes on, we do less and less of it. But it's still in there.
Yeah.
I like to think of it as something that we're playing with, like something that we're engaging with. Like, if I'm drumming to like a sequence, or for example, it's about the way that the drums fit in with the pattern of the sequence.
Right.
And it feels like a real, you know, about putting it together instead of like it backing us up or us backing it up.
And sure. Instead of like auxiliary percussion and backing vocals and organ and
right.
All that.
Right. Yeah. Right. Yeah. Yeah.
Which not that there's anything wrong with that, but
yeah. And we've done
different
a little bit of that at points, but I think we try to strip it down to what really needs to be there.
Yeah.
Is it, I mean, is that in any way, are you guys beyond the point where it stresses you out? Because I did notice that the people that I played with that this has gone wrong before.
Mm-hmm.
It's definitely gone wrong.
Oh, yes.
Yeah, it feels pretty stable to me right now.
It's good. Yeah, lately it's feeling good.
We've had some meltdowns. Have you?
Yeah, it happens.
Yeah. I mean, you know, regular bands without
sure.
backing stuff have meltdowns too.
So. Yeah. Yeah, I've been in those. I've been in those situations. Nothing worse than a guy having to stop a song and start over.
Yeah,
I've seen that happen.
Yeah,
yeah,
that's terrible. So, you guys were in Japan last fall.
Yeah, yeah.
Was that your first time there?
Yeah,
it was.
Yeah,
because
yeah.
you guys seem like. You were made in Japan.
Everybody
you know what I mean?
Says that.
People said that for years and we're like, I know, how can we get over there? And it finally happened.
Yeah, we put out a record with Zenkyo Records and they're based out of Tokyo. And they were really great. They helped us get over there and we had a blast.
How did it go?
It was awesome. It was super fun.
Yeah. How you guys play Europe? You played there. You've toured the States and stuff. You've played Fitzgerald's.
We've done it all.
You've done it all. What?
Not quite.
How is it? Is it so culturally different when you go to Japan and play? Audience wise?
Yes.
Yeah.
Yes. In what way?
They were very polite, very quiet. Which. Feels really strange to be, and you know, everybody gets down in their own way, but just very still and quiet.
That was the feeling of Japan overall is that people do things with so much more focus and get into so much more detail, but like as a point of pride to do everything like, mm-hmm. you know, to the utmost, whatever it is that they're doing.
Yeah.
And that definitely carries over into rock and roll to where like all the bands were very like, everybody could just like super technically intense and awesome.
Yeah,
and the crews at the clubs were all very and everything was like, you know, in its place and set up just so, and they had this incredible communication between each other.
Yeah, yeah, it's funny because that's something I've always noticed. It's reflected when you go to like those Japan nights during South by Southwest. Like the metal bands are like, they're metal.
Yeah,
like they are.
Yeah.
And they're wearing the clothes. And like, I mean, that's the thing is like you guys have
this is
such...
our thing. We're going to do it all the way.
Yeah.
Well, you guys are like that. I mean, very much. Like whenever I've seen you out, Yvonne, I don't know if you've ever even noticed, but I was telling my cousin Emily last night at dinner that I get intimidated. And I'm because you just seem like, you know what I mean?
Oh, no.
No, it's great. I wish I had that. It's like one of those things where like you... Yeah, there's a thing going on, and you always look great, and it's a very committed look. I'm totally not hitting on you.
No.
And so, anyway, Johnson, no, but you know what I mean.
Thank you so
much.
I mean,
does anyone ever say that to you? Did the Japanese?
No. One.
They all looked amazing.
It was only one time where I think we played in D.C. and afterwards. Man that was at the show came up and just started telling me how intimidating he thought I was. He asked if I was Russian and was, you know, just...
It might be your bang and your bangs and your posture.
maybe.
Like you have really good posture.
But,
and so that can be intimidating?
I don't know. You can trust that I have, you know, insecurities just like everybody else.
Sure.
And... I don't especially feel like this fierce.
But how awesome to walk around and give that off.
I'm actually usually very shy and feeling intimidated myself. So.
As we all are.
Yeah.
Are you guys shy at all? Toto?
Mostly.
Yeah, we're pretty quiet folks.
Yeah. It's funny because when you play, like I've seen you guys play and you get so intense.
Yeah.
You know?
We let it all out there.
Yeah. It's amazing. Man, how long have you guys been together for like 17 years?
99. We put up our show
years.
Summer of 99.
Okay.
Yeah. So yeah, 16.
Wow. Years. And you were in the band in 99 as well?
Yeah, she was in the band after maybe two shows.
Yeah,
okay. So that first record, The Christmas on Mars, that's the three of you guys. Who played saxophone?
Oh, that was our friend Marcus.
Okay.
That was in my high school funk band.
Who also played at Fitzgerald.
Yeah, my funk band. I wasn't in high school, but it was a post-college funk band played at Fitzgerald and was managed by Fitzgerald's.
Wow. What was the band?
What was the band?
Panjandrum.
Wow, I don't remember.
89 and 90.
Okay, wow. That would have been just before.
Yeah,
we were around.
Yeah.
Okay, so.
But we went to a lot of like Retarded Elf and
Sprawl
and all that.
Yeah.
That was our heyday.
I still hang out with Matt Kelly from Sprawl.
Yeah.
Wow.
Yeah, from back in the Houston funk days. And also Wubba, who was the singer of Retarded Elf.
Yeah.
You know, he became a fireman.
Wow.
Yeah, he was always really handsome. Now he's like a super handsome buff fireman.
Wow.
Nice.
Yeah, I'm letting too much out. Well, look, you got my digits. Find me on Facebook, buddy. What was I even going to say? Okay, so
we were talking about Josh's high school funk
band. It was extremely, yeah. What was it called? It was there a name?
It was called Elsie.
Elsie.
I did not name it.
Off of a cow? After a cow?
Yeah.
Yeah.
It was dumb.
But. That's good, though.
Yeah.
The first album, it's weird. It doesn't seem, I mean, obviously you grow and there becomes focus and like songs. It was really creative though.
Thanks.
And exciting. How did you guys do that? You recorded it yourself.
Yeah. We made it overnight at Josh's parents' house.
Yeah. It was a real quick, like I think before that we decided to put out something every Christmas to give to friends. And the year before that was
thinking of Christmas on Jail.
Oh,
which was the year before that.
Yeah, that one was bad. Nobody's heard that.
Like sound collage of like 15 Christmas carols laid over each other.
Yeah.
It had a jingle truck on it.
Playing all at once.
Yeah.
It was pretty bad. Yeah.
Well, that's what I like about a band that, I mean, are you guys, you're a band, but you're art rock. So where are you a rock band or an like first? Which came first, the art or the rock?
I don't know. I mean,
a band feels more like the operating model, but I don't know if one is predated the other, especially.
Mm-hmm.
The art of the music.
Okay. Yeah.
I mean, or this band started as kind of an experiment just to record and make weird sounds and see what, you know, we could come up with.
But see, most bands, when they start, they're like trying to get chicks. They're trying to become number one. They want to be like, you know, U2 or something. You know what I mean?
Yeah, totally.
And then with cool art bands, eventually, like they find their thing and they just keep on making stuff. And that's what I feel like, that's what I get from you guys.
Yeah.
It's not like a bonehead. You know what I mean? And I don't mean that in any way or to disparage even myself. But like, it just seems like it comes from a more experimental place, that if it wasn't music, you would still be doing this stuff in another medium, which you actually do.
Yeah.
Yeah. I think it's about trying stuff out as often and as pursuing things as often as possible when a new interest comes up or a different way to do something. And the methods are as interesting as the results, I think, for us.
But see, that's more of an art mind than a musician. That doesn't sound, no singer songwriter ever answers me like that.
Yeah. Well, yeah, and I think it's also more about the sound of the music than the
texturally.
Definitely.
That's a big draw.
Yeah. Yeah, you get that a lot from your music. There's a lot of different textures. And even in the soundtrack for the movie there, you know, you guys go from changes, obviously, ukulele, it's not. Is that called a Kyoto?
Koto.
Koto. Right, Koto. Damn.
Was the digital one was a fake Koto, right?
It was. I think maybe the first one was something sampled, and then there's a ukulele on top of it.
Or it's a really like intricate kind of part, and Toto played it on the it's in the computer, and then we decided that he should also play it on the ukulele.
I couldn't actually hack it on the ukulele, so I had to play it like two notes at a time and then paste it together.
That's good though.
Yeah,
I mean, it still came out. It comes out. The end result is great.
Thanks.
Yeah. So, you guys are going to Europe in the fall, at the end of the summer.
Just about 2 months.
You excited about that?
Very much.
How many times have you guys been there?
This will be our third, fourth?
Three or four.
Fourth.
Yeah?
Yeah.
How does it go over there for you guys?
It's okay.
Pretty good.
Working on it.
Yeah.
We're still building up. It's
been hard to get over there. It had been for years.
We love being there.
Yeah. We are always up for going. It's just an expensive endeavor.
I feel like
there's a lot involved.
It's like anywhere, like U.S., like some spots are awesome and some are not.
Yeah.
I feel like we got over in the States by just doing it over and over and playing to nobody until it got better. And that's probably the same thing we have to do over there. It's just harder to get there.
Yeah. How long have you guys been touring the States? For like 10 years
or more? Our first tour was 2002.
Jeez.
Yeah.
And our van got stolen on our first tour.
Really?
In
where?
New York City.
Oh, shit.
Outside of a Slater Kinney show.
Oh.
Yeah.
What did you, I mean, did you have to call your parents when that happened? Who did you call? Like, what was the parachute?
Well, we were.
How'd you get out of it?
We were like 23 or 4 or something, 25.
I turned 25 like 2 weeks before that.
Okay.
During that tour.
I felt like we were too young to rent something.
Yeah, we were too young.
And we ended up pooling like kind of just all the money that we had together and bought this horrible van.
We had all our gear. We'd taken our gear out of the van, so which was great.
Oh, that is brilliant.
Yes. Yeah. It was in our friend's place.
Yeah.
But then we had all this gear with us, and so we ended up buying a terrible van and tried to catch back up with the tour to finish it, but then that van broke down and we didn't make it. And eventually...
we tried so hard.
Yeah. Did you worry at all that it was... Did you worry that you weren't going to be able to finish?
Yeah.
We were trying real hard.
We really tried as hard.
Yeah. We did everything we could.
The van broke down in Greensboro, where my parents happened to have some friends, and so we ended up having to spend like 4 days in Greensboro while the rest of the tour.
The rest
of the tour dates passed by while we were waiting for the second van to get fixed.
The van broke down over Memorial Day weekend, or it was a 3-day weekend, so we were stuck there for 4 days.
It broke down like Friday at 4:30 p.m. or something. And then we had to wait until Tuesday to get it fixed.
Now you got a better van.
Yes.
Yeah. we do now.
We do now.
Actually, the first van, which was my van at the time, ended up being found. The NYPD found it.
Oh, really?
And sent me a letter like 2 months later or something. And I ended up with a friend driving the terrible van back up to New York City, sold it to somebody else, and got my van back and drove home.
The terrible van was fine at that point because we'd fixed it.
We'd fixed it.
It was roadworthy enough to get back up there.
Jesus. Wow, that's commitment.
Yeah.
That's total commitment.
Yeah, I feel like, I mean, it was pretty like harrowing at the time, but when we got home, I felt like, you know, if we can get through this, we could probably get through anything. Because it was like, you know, we were so young.
I only think that now. I didn't have that amount of, what's the word?
I don't know.
I wasn't thinking about it that much. It sounds way worse now than it felt then. It felt pretty bad then, but it was still just like, I guess this is what you do.
Yeah. I mean, it wasn't going to stop the tour.
Yeah. No, we were determined. It was our first tour.
Well, and every tour has been better after
than that one. That's really good. I mean, so where all, when you guys tour the States, do you do like the East Coast and the...
Yeah, just
we should do like a circuit to the east and a circuit to the west.
Okay. Yeah. It seems like 2 or 3 weeks on one side, take some time off, 2 or 3 weeks on the other side. It's kind of a good balance.
Yeah. And you guys, it's nice because you're together. And so even though it's not husband Josh, it's, what's his name there?
Just Josh.
Rock Josh.
Yeah. Rock husband.
Rock Josh.
Who does the video ads for the shows?
I guess we all do.
Yeah?
Yeah.
Those are cool, by the way. I love that you guys put it into everything that you do. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
I appreciate that.
Yeah. Toto started doing that like maybe around 2010 or something.
Does it make a difference?
Yeah.
I don't know. I like to think so.
Yeah.
It's another excuse to do something, to learn something.
Yeah. Yeah, no, totally.
Josh made the last one as an excuse to learn new like 3D modeling software, so...
That Lola's one?
Yeah.
That was cool.
Thanks.
There's a video, is it Whitby? That has all of the... How long did you guys take doing that?
It wasn't...
3 weeks?
It was like two or 3 weeks. Like we weren't working like all day long every day.
No.
But it was... it was over a pretty extended time, I guess.
Yeah.
From like start to finish. Of like, hey, this is, we have this idea. Yeah. Let's buy this thing and then let's make it.
It was constrained too by leaving on tour. So we only ended up having a few days to really shoot. And then we just had to leave and edit it in the van and try to squeeze the most amount of content out of the footage that we had.
Yeah.
Try to use every frame that we shot.
I bet this has been an amazing 15 years because from whenever you guys started the band, the ability to make these videos and just do them on your laptop and edit stuff, like that has come so far.
Yeah.
That, do you guys do a lot of social media stuff?
Yeah, we try to. I mean,
yeah, we're trying. We're working on it. Yeah.
That's hard to, I mean, it's hard when you're this, I mean, you do everything else.
Yeah.
Like, and then also you want me to tell people or whatever, like, yeah. Do clever stuff.
Yeah. I feel like each little social media thing has its own fun, you know, like Instagram, you can just put a weird picture and you don't have to say we're playing a show or whatever.
It can just
be like, you know, your dog or something.
I feel like it's most successful when we can roll it into something that is fun, like making the show ads is kind of a, you know, serves two purposes of like being entertaining for us to sit there and make, but then also is something that we can yell about on the internet.
Sure. And that's important.
Yeah.
Hey, let me ask you this about your crowds. Do you guys play a lot of festivals here in the States?
Yeah.
And do you get pulled into electronic things?
Not too much.
Shows or festivals?
Really.
No? Okay. Because I was going to ask, I was wondering, because I was talking to Aaron from Ghostland Observatory, and he was saying that it's gotten hard for them here because the culture of the shows that they play is so druggy.
Yeah. Yeah, or I see their name on, like, you know, whatever that, like, Bass Nectar is playing.
Right, the same kind of thing. But you guys don't get pulled into those?
No, yeah. I don't know how, even though it's, like, kind of how I think about the band, and I think how a lot of people do, when you actually listen to it, I don't know how electronic it sounds, or it doesn't seem like it sounds that dancey to me.
Not at all. But I could see that energy, you know, from half of your music being up and like playful and fun to, and you know, there's synth and some drum machine stuff going on sometimes. You might be invited or roped into it. I'm glad that it's not like that.
I mean,
we're
down for being roped into things.
We'll
be on whoever's bill.
We'll play anywhere. It's fun.
Right.
We still love it.
I think it might confuse some more like electronic specific, you know, festivals. Or
I can only think of
one
gig in particular in Nottingham, England that we got roped into where it was like a multi-room club complex and it was all DJs everywhere and we were the only band playing and nobody knew why we were there. And we only had one song in the set that was like kind of a four on the floor, like kick drum. And when we played that one, people started wandering in and you know, swaying around. And then when it was over, then they all walked back out and we finished the set to like two people.
Yeah. Because, I guess I saw that you guys did a show with the guys from Devo.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. How amazing is that? Because that's where I think soulfully, that's where you guys come from to me. Like that's the kind of band that you are.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, really.
Yeah, they seem to approach it as kind of a larger art project as well.
I didn't get that from them.
Well, there is also playfulness because the first time I ever saw them, I guess I was like 10 or 11 and they were on Saturday Night Live.
I saw that too.
You did?
Yeah.
And they did Satisfaction and they threw themselves on their backs and were like...
He talks about that with my friends.
Honestly, I've been looking for that to find it because I have this... I was like 12, I think, when I saw it. It was like a Saturday Night Live like rerun, kind of like, here are all the bands that have played over the past 20 years or whatever. And I remember seeing it and I saw them and at the time I was like, are these robots or like what is going on? This is like, it just blew my mind.
That clip show he's talking about is still my only knowledge of a lot of bands. Like, the only thing I know about, like, I don't know, Pat Benatar is like her 20 seconds in that competition show.
I'm trying to think if there's anything else you need to know. I'm pretty well versed in Benatar. If you ever need a guide.
Yeah.
Benatar 101.
And through Benatar.
I'm kind of in the Benatar weeds here, man. Can you lead me?
No, but there's bands. That's good. I'm glad that. What are they like as a fan? As a fan,
they're. I mean,
who was it? It was Mark.
It was Mark and Jerry. Were the two that we played with.
The first time we met them, when we got to play literally with them, it was Mark and Jerry.
Yeah, and then we got to tour with them 6 months or so after that,
and that was the whole band where we were opening.
How was that?
It was amazing. It was great. Yeah.
I bet that you guys were also totally. I bet that's a great crowd.
It was interesting, though.
Unless there was like just people there for Whippet.
Die hard Devo fans. Yeah,
Devo way more than for a rock show, if that makes any sense.
Yeah.
I mean, like people who don't go to see music, but they were going to see Devo.
Right.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Or hadn't been to a concert in a long time, but wanted to bring their kids to see Devo or whatever.
Yeah.
Like mostly 40, 50-year-old kind of folks that, you know, yeah.
I guess it wasn't all old people.
That's not old.
Yeah, thank you.
Older.
Josh, you just became my favorite member of the Octopus Project. So the record for Kumiko just came out recently, and it's available. And it's going to come out on vinyl soon, or is it out on vinyl?
It's coming out next week.
Hopefully next week.
Oh, really?
Yeah. Awesome. I think we're getting... We have the actual vinyl, but we're getting the jackets tomorrow.
Okay. What are you guys working on now? What's the next?
We're working on a bunch of new tunes and the Mister thing that you mentioned earlier.
Yes.
When we put it out, it was like an idea to put out something that came with like a USB stick with some just kind of new ideas, like demo-ish kind of songs, sort of in between a demo and a record kind of song,
like a mixtape.
Yeah.
I think the kids call them a mixtape.
Mixtape.
It's a mix stick.
But mix stick.
no tape involved.
Yeah.
Yeah, what am I talking about?
They do still call them tapes, though, even if it's
three. Yeah. But I mean, to me, it's still a mixtape.
Yeah.
Yeah.
But we're working on a new, something like that, like a new thing to put out that comes with a USB stick full of ideas.
Okay. Objet d'art that comes with sounds.
Mm-hmm. Okay. And when did Lauren start playing with you guys? Fairly recently?
Mm-hmm. Yeah. South By this year.
Yeah, that was her first shows with us were South By.
Honestly, like, I can't think of a, if we were friends outside of the podcast and you guys were looking for a guitar player, it's like three people that would come to mind, and she would probably be the first person to come to mind. Because I saw her wear a jumpsuit with Elizabeth McQueen that was lit up too. So I was like, she would probably do whatever you guys wanted to do.
That was kind of the first thing that she said.
Yeah.
And that was also how she was recommended to us through a mutual friend. It was like we were asking around and somebody was like, definitely Lauren.
Yeah. Because she embodies that spirit musically to me.
She's just, she's up for anything.
She's badass, too.
She is.
Like, amazing.
She's not just weird and textural. She's really badass. She's,
yeah. And she can play circles around all of us. It's awesome.
That's a good feeling, right?
Oh, yeah.
How is that when you bring in someone new into this crew that's been together for, like, closing in on 20 years? Like, how does it breathe in? It's a breath of fresh air. Is it exciting?
It's always exciting.
Does she become part of the creative
as much
process?
We're working on it.
I mean, I imagine that this trio has its, you guys have your roles when you're making stuff, that someone jumping in, it might be like trying to get on a merry-go-round when they're spinning real fast. you guys have your thing going.
Yeah.
But I think she's also used to playing with a lot of different situations and to like jumping into this or that.
Yeah.
And so I think she's pretty well adapted to the curveballs.
But there is something that I learned about you guys today in my preparation for this, is that this is, you guys, when you started this band, you said, hey, let's be this band and not be like guys in other bands doing other stuff. Even though she is doing that stuff, there is a certain amount of like Octopus Project thing that you would need to commit yourself to be, you know, it just seems like you guys have committed your lives to this.
Yeah.
Yeah.
On all levels.
Right.
And I think that would be, I mean, it must be interesting to have, at least you have someone really creative and cool and textural and great fulfilling that role.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And she really wanted to be here today.
Oh, good.
But yeah, she's fantastic.
I enjoyed her. I wish I knew off the top of my head what the what episode number it was. Oh, here's another thing I wanted to talk to you guys about. The Saturn Birmingham installation.
Yeah.
Okay, here's something cool. I put that on when I took a shower and got dressed and stuff, and it just played. And then I realized, is that... That's constantly being made as people, when you push play on that thing.
Opening doors and using water taps or the beer taps and coffee lines and...
Yeah, sound, light.
Yeah.
Now, is that, like, is the technology of that, is that like the theremin as you get close to things,
some
it
of
reacts
them, yeah.
to it?
Mm. Some of the.
Like what about, did you guys see that thing that Elizabeth McQueen did at that theater?
No.
When Lauren played.
Oh,
and they,
I wish I had. I did.
But you know what I'm talking about?
Yeah, yeah.
Because I saw a show that you guys did on video or some pictures of it, and it looked kind of like the same thing.
Yeah.
But not the same. But the visuals are reacting to the sound and the movement.
At the Human Achievement gig?
Yes.
That we did?
Yeah.
Oh, wait. You guys did a gig there too?
Yeah,
in April?
Mm-hmm.
Okay. But so did Elizabeth.
I know. Yeah.
Okay. But it was a similar kind of thing.
Yeah.
Okay.
Similar ideas.
Technology?
But different. Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Okay.
Yeah.
But the technology that you can find, explain what this is, because I think we just totally confused people. I asked you about Saturn and then started talking about the Museum of Human Achievement. There is an installation which is at a venue called Saturn in Birmingham, Alabama.
Yes. Mm-hmm.
And you can find this on your Facebook page, a link to it, which is where I found it. And I just pushed play on the thing. And what's playing, explain, is music that's being made. Whoever knows about it the best can explain it the best. Explain it.
Yeah,
because there's science now.
Toto was the one that dove into the guts the most.
So. There are sensors placed around the building of various kinds. There are magnetic switches on doors that detect open or close. There's photocells that detect the amount of light. Microphones that detect the sound level, the range detectors that say how close something is to the sensor, things like that scattered around the building. Those all feed into the computer where the software translates that into essentially MIDI controllers that are operating on this musical structure that we have waiting to be affected by the different inputs.
So you guys created the structure and then... People are like, there's a chord already in place.
Roughly, yeah. But then it'll do things like we made sounds that are in the right key. I think it's all in D, and then threw them into a sampler so that when the door opens, it triggers one of those samples randomly.
Right.
And like the light cell will open or close a filter on a synthesizer based on how much light there is. The brighter it gets, the more open the filter gets.
And essentially what you're getting is like the effect of listening to like Brian Eno's music for airports.
Oh, yeah. God.
But people are kind of unwillingly, you know,
but
controlling
it's constantly,
it.
Is there a way to record it? Because you might come across some really great shit that you didn't have to write.
They would make a record, actually.
That's part of the whole idea originated with Brian Teasley, who runs the venue. It was his idea, and we've gotten to be friends with him. He used to run a venue called The Bottle Tree, also in Birmingham, which is how we got to know him when we played there. And when he was starting this place, he had this idea for essentially what we made and brought us in to kind of help realize it.
That's amazing.
Yeah, but part of his original idea was that the venue would release its own albums.
And then sounds could change over time, too.
Yeah.
Like bands coming in, you know, like say, you know, like Polyphonic Spree just played there. Like they could bring in their own sounds that, you know, they could put in the whole system. And then while they were there, it would be playing those sounds.
Right. We could plug other people's sounds into the structure that exists.
That's amazing. That's so cool.
Yeah.
And it's cool as shit to listen to. Like, I know it sounds, it really is. It was really nice to listen to.
Yeah. I love putting it on. It's really comforting.
Yeah.
You should check it out. Juan Engineer. No, you don't have to check it out now, but you should check it out.
Sure? I could just check it out right now.
You're welcome to.
Okay.
I was just meant you didn't have to right now. So outside of doing Europe in September, you guys are playing a show at the Bob Bullock Museum, which is Music Under the Star, on July 24th.
Yes.
Yep.
With the Golden Dawn Orchestra.
Yeah.
Indeed.
Do you have anything? What happens when you play and it's daytime outside?
We don't have video.
No, just
less flashy things.
Less, yeah.
But I think we are.
But you guys are. I mean, when you guys. I mean, when you play, there's the excitement of like a full on rock band.
Oh yeah, yeah. No. It's still just as fun.
There's sweat.
Yeah.
There's always sweat.
Yeah.
Yes.
In some ways, it's kind of nice to have those limitations placed on the amount of production we can do because it kind of strips things down a little bit.
Yeah. Do you find an wait a minute, before we get into that, that's like a special show series that's going on, and is it presented by the museum or the state of Texas or what's going on?
It's the museum and Fun Fest.
Oh, okay.
Which I and it's their like 10th anniversary. Fun. And so I guess this year is I don't. It's the 10th anniversary special.
Have you guys been playing it since it started?
We played the first year.
You did?
Yeah.
And you're playing again this year?
It's a special fest for us.
Yeah. We're just playing. We're not playing the actual fest this year. This thing. So.
Okay.
The show's free, too, by the way.
Free
and outdoors, and everybody should come.
Yeah. And whole families can come see you guys.
Exactly. Yeah.
I mean, there's no, you know what I mean?
Yeah. No.
Yeah.
Good one for the children.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Do you feel like when you do shows like what you did at the Museum of Human Achievement, when you go with the visuals, do you find that you need to top yourself every time you do it? I've always been scared of that.
I don't know about top it, but at least do something new.
Yeah.
Right.
Yeah.
I guess I'm thinking in terms of like Madonna, like this time it has to explode. My boobs have to fly.
I don't feel like we have to escalate, but I do always feel like we should be working on something new.
Yeah. Mm. That's amazing, and after all this time, it's still fresh, and you know what I mean?
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And you're still doing it, and you're still together. That's a great achievement. I mean, it really is.
It does feel pretty special.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah, there's something very, very special about you guys and what you do. I'm glad that you took the time. Am I missing anything? Is it? Man, this is like...
Yeah. I don't know. It's hard to
say.
It's hard to say from the inside.
Juan, is your mic on? You want
it is.
Tell them about the scavenger hunt you went on.
Oh,
check this out.
So, okay, so you guys, the Alamo Drafthouse had a scavenger hunt for the Kumiko premiere.
Oh, yeah, yeah.
And you guys were there, right?
We were at the screening. Yeah.
Well, my friends and I won that scavenger.
Oh, wow! You won the scavenger hunt. Isn't that awesome?
Oh, congratulations!
Well,
thank you. And okay, also we killed it. There was
I
don't know if you know the rules. There's like this Twitter hashtag thing that was happening and a text that you'd get back, so people kind of could follow and see where you were in the scavenger hunt and what place you were in. But we were so far ahead that we stopped at a bar to have drinks.
Oh my gosh.
And make fun of the other people.
Yeah, we'd hold I think one of the clues was a picture of you guys.
Oh.
Wow.
Somewhere up north. I can't remember where it was.
That's hilarious.
But yeah, it was a good time, and I won, cool. And it was fun. Thank you.
What did you win?
We won like 15 movie passes, which was great.
Nice. Yeah.
Total, you know.
Yeah.
We won a bar tab for that day, and I don't know, maybe a couple stickers and stuff. And it was worth it. It was fun. We would have done it for free. You know?
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
No, it sounded awesome.
Yeah, that sounds.
It was
fun.
A good time. Yeah.
But, cool.
Yeah. Thank you.
So there you go. Yeah. Isn't that weird? You'd never really meet people that are, you know, you might not have even really been that aware of that scavenger hunt going on. You just might have had to be at the movie theater at a certain time to introduce the movie.
That's I didn't find it out about it until we got there, actually.
Yeah.
And they were like, oh, yeah, the scavenger hunt's been going on. I was like, what? I had no idea. I would have told people.
Really?
Yeah.
That's so weird.
Yeah.
It's unbelievable. So am I missing anything at all? No? Yes? Is there anything you guys want to talk about? People can rent Kumiko or buy it on iTunes.
Yeah, it's a really
great movie. I mean, it really is, and the music is absolutely beautiful. And it was cool to listen to it on headphones and really be focused on that. You know, while I was watching the movie. Anyway, I appreciate you guys and what you do, and I thank you so much for coming out for our first podcast at Word Company Studios.
Thank you for having us.
Thanks, you guys. The Octopus Project What an amazing band. What an amazing group of people. They're so nice, too. They're nice. They're creative. They make beautiful music. They make beautiful visual art. Juan, did you have a good time?
I haven't had a better time.
Doing a podcast ever?
Never.
Whoa. Now we got a lot to live up to.
Oh, yeah.
For the next one. Man, thank you so much for doing this. This has been great. I like hanging out at Word Podcast Studios.
Oh, yeah, it's great here. Thank you.
Hey, people, if you want to get involved with the Octopus Project, I can't imagine you don't know who they are, but if by chance you're listening to this and you've never come across them, check them out at theoctopusproject.com. They have limitless albums available, tons of music. I would like to recommend one thing, but I don't even know if I can. I would say check out the Kumiko, the Treasure Hunter album, which is out now and should be out on vinyl this week. If you appreciate the vinyl, I want to get one of those. I wish they would have brought us those Viewmasters because that's what I wanted to see.
Oh, yeah. I don't, but that's weird because you can't really translate that into podcast form.
No, not until we make a video podcast.
That's true.
Now I'm starting to get, let's get some GoPros in here. Juan, let's make some movies.
Let's do it.
Hey, thank you guys so much for listening. Don't forget, you can find them at theoctopusproject.com. You can find their music on iTunes. You can also find it on Spotify, wherever music is found. You can subscribe to this podcast on iTunes, and you can also find it on Stitcher, which is a great place to stream your podcast. You stream your movies, you stream your music. Why not stream your podcast? Stitcher, smarter way to listen to radio. And also, like our Facebook page. Do get involved with it. Leave us comments. Do you like this show? What do you think about the new Word Studios? How do you like Juan? And hey, be nice because he's a nice guy.
I'm going to read these comments. So.
He's going to read these comments. Thank you so much for listening. Here's some more music from the Octopus Project. Have a great week. Let's get down.